I just prayed it, but I want to quick poll you right now if I can. When you were young, did you do what you were told? Okay, I'm seeing a couple of yes, I did. I am so tempted to hand you a microphone and have you give a testimony right now of how somehow heaven lost an angel in you. So, okay, in general, and this is the show of hands, how many of you were, shall we say, in general, more compliant as a child? Wow, it's kind of even. You know, I thought that might be on the right-hand side of the room or the left. I wasn't quite sure. Okay, other side, how many of you were, as a rule, more defiant? Now put your hand down. See? Brian's still standing right now. So, in some case, that was, by the way, that was not staged. That was just perfect. But when I went, put your hand down, I was expecting Glenn Sexton to go, uh-uh, no, I'm not going to do it. So, I'll let you guess my answer to that little quiz. I was a Boy Scout. This probably says it best. And I was Troop 311, Oakland, California. And we went to Yosemite on a summer backpack trip. And we came walking through, I guess it was Yosemite Village, I'm not really sure, I was too young, but we come around a corner, and we had been briefed by our scoutmaster about the possibility of bears, and they do raid trash cans and such at night, and sure enough, we come around a corner, and there's a bear as big as a building. I mean, it is huge. And there were lights around, so it wasn't really trying to be, invisible. And he is just mauling this trash can, and I hear these words. I didn't know where they came from at the moment, but I hear, "Stay back!" And there's maybe 30 of us or so, and most of the boys just froze. But I thought it would be kind of cool to get up real close and see how long this bear would maintain his focus on the trash can before he declared me his next trash can, right? And I started to lean into it, at which time I felt, in the moment, a whack on the side of my head. And it wasn't the bear. It was my scoutmaster trying to get my attention, which in fact likely saved my life. Because I was too young to know the possibilities, and I was too defiant to care a whole lot about who might have said, "Stay back." I was slow to get the message. And I think I'm not just talking to about a story from my past. I think I'm probably talking to a fair number of us who are a bit slothful when it comes to getting a point. Or connecting the dots, as I like to say. Really, so many examples came to mind, but you know, when you heard as a child, don't touch the stove, it's hot. I don't know if this happened to you, but for some of us, we thought, how hot? And we found out. Or maybe, don't play with matches. Anybody heard that one? And then anybody follow it with, who's got a fire extinguisher? Right? Or don't drive so fast. This was a little bit later. I remember my father sitting next to me, and I had disabled the speedometer on my car. So he would quit complaining about how fast I drove. But he knew, because we went around a corner that was way too fast. When your car starts to kind of lean on two tires, and you get, not a motorcycle, a car, then you know you're going a little too fast. And my father says, don't drive too fast. How many remember that from some person in authority? And then a short time later, you look at a piece of paper that was handed to you, and you think to yourself, how in the world can a ticket cost that much? Right? Because we don't get it. We don't make these connections easily. What makes people, is a question I have had on my mind in preparing this message. Even grown-ups ignore good counsel. Now you need to think about that question this morning, because you and I are about to be given good counsel. No, correction. great counsel. My Bible's open to such counsel. And every time you open your Bible or I open mine, you're not getting okay stuff. You're getting stuff that trumps everything else you can possibly hear. Let me say it a different way. The truest thing that could be said about any subject is what God has to say. If professors agree, good for them. If they don't agree, too bad for them. God trumps all. Do you hear me? Truest thing that could be said about you or any issue you have about life is what God has to say. So back to the great counsel idea. It comes from Solomon, as you might imagine. He was the third king of Israel and son of the nation's greatest king, which was David, of course. He was likely, and we're not quite sure about to pinpoint exactly how many years and months, but he was likely in his late teens. That surprise you? Hopefully not any more than the fact that Mary, the mother of Jesus, was probably a sophomore in high school, somewhere in there, give or take a few years. Telling me there's a whole lesson there. We don't have time to go there, but remind your kids, you can be a big deal for God. He chose a teenager to have his son, and he chose Solomon to be an amazing king. But he was feeling inadequate, this Solomon, as you might guess, to follow or succeed his father. And one night in a dream, troubled in his spirit during the day, he was kind of working things out at night. You ever done that? Well, Solomon was doing that. And he comes to God, or rather, God comes to him in a dream, and he makes an unbelievable offer. Now, I'm going to put this on the screen. You don't have to turn here. It's right here for you in 1 Kings chapter 3. By the way, the story of Solomon, 1 Kings, you can go there and see how it begins and unfolds. Imagine God coming to you with such an offer. Put your name in there. Hey, Steve, ask me for anything. Ask for whatever you want me to give you. Presumably, the assumption, the inference for sure, is that God would deliver on whatever Solomon said. Is that a fair reading of that? So God's not just talking in a sort of a campfire way. What would you do with $1 million? You know? No, this is God coming to him in a dream and saying, ask for whatever you want from me, and I will give it to you. I thought through a list of possible answers. Maybe you have your list too. You could ask for money. You could ask for health. If you're single, you could ask for marriage. I won't go the other way with that one. If you're in a bad marriage, you could ask to be out. But anyway, if you're married but don't have children, surely you could be like Debbie and I. We asked. We would have answered that question that way. God, give us a baby. We plead with you. Fame might be on somebody's list or in their answer. If you ask the ones going after Pokemon these days, fun might be it, right? They're all over my neighborhood. I'm like, there's zombies at every corner. What is happening to my neighborhood? And they don't care because they didn't hear me say that. There's nothing. It's
horrible.
It's horrible. Okay, so you could ask for all the... Oh, here's one more serious. You could ask for the vanquishing, complete systemic elimination of your enemies. That'd work, including your boss maybe in some case. But so here's what Solomon answered. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant, speaking of himself, king in place of my dad, David. But I'm only a little child. Those are words of intimidation and inferiority. He's got a big shadow. I'm only a little child, and I don't even know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among your people, the people that you have chosen. And there's lots of them. Great people, too numerous to count or number. So give me, give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours on their own? And his prayer was done, and the Lord answered. The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So we go on later in the same passage to find out that God granted him wisdom. You ready for this? Wisdom than any human has ever had before or since on this planet. You know a smart guy or gal? Their wisdom is on the continuum of amazing to not so amazing. They're not at the top of that. Solomon is. So God answered his prayer by giving him unparalleled, unequaled wisdom before or after him, and wealth greater than any of his contemporaries. There have been wealthier people since. So as a result, let me bring it down to something that you have on your laps or on your laptop or your device this morning. You have a Bible that bears the blessing of God delivering on his prayer. God, I need wisdom. Our Bibles bear Song of Solomon, most of the Proverbs, two Psalms, and where my Bible's open to this morning, Ecclesiastes. Would you turn there to page 461 if you're looking for a quick way to get there? Use the Bible that's tucked near you. And on your way there, let me say a couple things about a weird name, Ecclesiastes. It's a strange name, don't you think? It actually means preacher. Think of this that we're going to read as a written manuscript of a message that he preached. And you're not far from reality. So Solomon taught. He took all this wisdom and then he imparted it. Much of it was done as an orator or a communicator. You see that in chapter 12 in just a second. Well, by the way, we're not going through all 12 chapters. But you have Solomon here, who is this preacher, and he wrote it, this sermon, in first person, which kind of tips it into the category of journal. It could be also fairly accurately thought of as, wow, we found a 12-chapter journal of a man that was willing to say some pretty bold things. When did he write it? It's unclear. Possibly midlife, and I only tell you this because I think it has bearing on what you and I take away from it. Could have been midlife, so-called midlife crisis, or late in life. We're just not sure. But you will see it clearly has a tone of been there, done that. There isn't a person talking here in a theoretical sense. This is someone that you wanted a front row seat to listen to because they've worked it out. And he tells in this sermon, this self-message, if you will, that He tells his story and his struggle in his search. And his search was all about finding meaning in life. So he tries different things. And he tastes other things. And he tests much of what life had to offer. That's the whole tone of what this... Already you're going, wow, I didn't know that was in here. And so I'm going to get past the Ecclesiastes weird title. Okay? I hope you do, because there's so much throughout this 12 chapters. But his conclusion was that fulfillment and satisfaction and meaning are altogether missing in much of life. So we're done, right? Shortest sermon I've ever preached. I'm probably like you a little bit. I want to see proof. I want to see evidence that he really did this stuff. that you just said, Pastor. He really did taste it, and he really did try it, and he really tested it. How can I know? And that's what we're going to talk about. He goes so far as to say much of his effort, much of his search for meaning was absolute futility. I have a book in my bookshelf, my study, by Tony Campolo called Adventures in Missing the Point. And I think Solomon maybe looked forward and thought, that's going to be a great title. That's good stuff. Because I think Solomon could describe what you and I are looking at and about to read as an adventure in missing the point. So it was written, Ecclesiastes, to warn people like you and me that life is bitter and bad, experienced when we look for meaning apart from God. All right? That's what you will find if you're on that path now in your life. Maybe you've been on it a while. But right now you can't stop thinking of that child or that friend who still hasn't corrected their course. They still believe, incorrectly, you'll see in a moment, that they can find it. When they find it, like, you know, Ponce de Leon, the fountain will be theirs and they will be satisfied. Eternally, perpetually youthful and fulfilled at every turn. So, let's take a look. Let's just get started, verse 1. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. This is probably a good teaching tool. Start out your message with a jolt, and that's what he does. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Okay, quick quiz. What's he talking about? Use the word. Yeah. Well, not meaningless is actually the word. Four times in one verse. The opening verse. Four times. What do people gain from all of their labors at which they toil under the sun? So Solomon, the king, we could say, who won the wisdom and the wealth lottery, starts out with quite a little jolt, his search for something to satisfy. Well, let's just kind of bore in a little bit to two words, two expressions he used right out of the gate. The first, and by the way, these are just four of 36 times that you will find the word meaningless. So it's, you could say with a casual look, that's the message of this message. That's the theme of this sermon. It's, he started and states and repeats by frequent statement, life is meaningless, pointless. Let me give you a couple more synonyms. Bland. Boring. Think of this as 36 failed experiments to find fulfillment. Maybe it's here. No, not there. Maybe it's here. No, not there. Maybe I should try this. No, not that. And it goes on and on. I think of ice cream. It was 31 flavors when I grew up. But imagine being told, you need to sample the different flavors, and when you find the flavor, you will never be satisfied with any other flavor, right? So imagine yourself going down the line and getting a sample of all 36 flavors. Maybe it's this one. Nope. Maybe it's that one. Nope. And finally, by the time you come to the end of 36 flavors, your conclusion? Whatever. Got a million calories in me. That's it. I couldn't tell you. Over time, in fact, flavors blur and blend together. I don't even know. Whatever. That's the word meaningless. But he didn't just say it one time and move on. The point I'm trying to make and that he's making is it happened 36 times as a result of leaning into different parts of life. Wondering, is this it? Is this the flavor that will satisfy me and I'll never be settled again by vanilla? Second expression, same passage we just looked at, verse 3. Notice the expression, under the sun. He uses this expression 29 times in these 12 chapters. He's searching and he's looking for pleasure and joy, some kind of satisfaction that has a longer shelf life than a Twinkie. That's what he's after. Right? Is there nothing anywhere I go that will fill me up and leave me full? That's his question. And you know, I know I'm looking at people that wonder same kinds of questions. Maybe it's that new pair of shoes. Maybe it's that new that trip. My bucket list, that's it. And we keep looking. Just as he did because he failed to find it. Why? It's the expression under the sun. He was looking in all the wrong places. It's an idiom for describing life without God. It would be correct to say it's in contrast to above the sun where God is. You getting it that way? So he's saying, I look for fulfillment and purpose under the sun. 29 times I tried to enjoy life without God, under the sun, and not one time satisfied. Just the sheer number of attempts by Solomon to uncover what would fail to deliver satisfaction is a powerful statement. You say, why is that? Why would that be so significant? Because it takes away the possible kind of retort or comeback. Well, Solomon, your problem was you really just didn't try hard enough. Or, you know something? You didn't search long enough. Or you just didn't try the right things. And Solomon would say every time, are you serious? Really? I'm a guy that has kicked dirt clod after dirt clod and found nothing. Brain teaser time. You ready for one? All right, here's a brain teaser. How many pointless points does it take to make a point? Everywhere Solomon searched, the results were the same. Not here. Not here. So for credibility's sake, before we wind this down, let's answer two questions. Before we, so you're not taking my word for it, even though I got it right out of the book. Let's let your eyes see it too. Before we consider his conclusion, okay? How and where did he search? Did Solomon search? And I say in a word, would you write this word? His search was thorough. You'll see why. Verse 13, look at verse, well, 12, let's start there. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my mind to circle these two words, study, and to, another word, explore by wisdom all that is done under the sun, or under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Let's start with the word searched, because that's studied. It's the word he uses. I applied my mind to study. This is serious study. We would call this research today. He cracked the books. He went to a library and locked himself in. And he went to get to the bottom line about a certain subject. What we're talking about here is mostly academia. So Solomon's saying, I didn't just go and experience this. No, 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 no. I went to the library. That's where I started. And I studied. And I probed. And I experimented. I looked into different data deeply. That's the word studied. And then it's as though he had a lecture in a lab. You know, my daughter has a physiology class right now, and there's about a 3-hour lecture, and then it's followed by a 2-hour lab. And that's where you take what was just said by the professor, and you go into a kind of a hands-on, let's tinker with and experiment to see it in real time, in real life. That's the word he uses for explore. It's hands-on. So the first word, study, is academic. The next word, to explore, is experiential. I want to try it. So let me bring it down to behavioral things. Some say consuming alcohol is fine and fun, and the more the merrier. So he wasn't satisfied with the research that people reported such things. He wanted to find out how much it took to get completely bombed, and he did it frequently. That's the kind of hands-on, I'm not going to take your word for it approach he's employing. He, in his words that come up in a minute, heard that people talked about sexual intimacy and sexual exploits as being the sort of holy grail. That will produce what you're missing and longing for. If you could just have more of those more frequently, then you'll have found it. So he decided that he would hold back nothing, as he had numerous partners to find out for himself. Is it true? If some say money, another area that pops up big. If some say money brings happiness, he amasses great fortunes to find out what Rockefeller was asked. How much is enough? This is what study and explore looked like to Solomon. And did you see, as I read at the end of verse 13, his conclusion? Life is a heavy burden done under the heavens. You see that? What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind, which roughly translates into Hebrew, what a bummer. It's no fun. So just before we read how his sermon ended, I want you to look across the page at where. That's how he did it. He studied and he searched. But where did he study? Where did he search? Chapter 2 tells us where. Look at verses 1 to 3, and let's give a word for this first search, this first study. Let's just call it pleasure. Okay? He explored pleasure. I said to myself, come on, let's go for it. My paraphrase, you see in verse 1? Let's go for it. Pull out the stops, man. I'll test you with pleasure to find out what's good. That also proved to be, there's his word again, meaningless. Laughter, I said, it's madness. What does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine. There's the liquor and alcohol. Today, marijuana. You can do it. It's legal. But it was stupid. That's what he means by embracing folly. It was dumb. My mind still guiding me with wisdom. So he hadn't completely lost it. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. So pleasure here is everything you imagine it to be. It's the stuff of sensuality and sexuality. Nothing refused. I would say he was at this point leaning into doing crazy. But he hadn't, in his own words, completely lost his mind in his folly. Let's go with the sexuality thing. If lots of partners brings the thing you've been looking for all these years, then 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 3 says, to confirm that, he had 700 wives and 300 toys. Remember I said he studied? He could have got all that in the library. The Bible says in verse 13, he explored. And that's how far he took it. Too bad he failed to take notes on his dad, David, don't you think? I wonder how many times his dad went, you know, son, this is dumb. What I did was created a calamity that has never left me. Sad consequences, son, for the sexual sin that I chose. Can I say something to you if you have young people? Or if you're a young person? You know, you might have parents or youth leaders or others that have said to you repeatedly, don't go there. Don't go there. My question is, will you listen to them? Will you receive the rebuff of their words? I had a man write me years ago, I've never forgotten, the insanity. He says, you know, I can spare the verses, Pastor. Know what the Bible says, but I'm gonna go off the path. I'm gonna leave the rails. And I had a wife, kids, three of them, and decided to do it in spite of what God says. The second letter I got from him was, can you please help me find a way to make this divorce painless on my family? And my response, he critiqued as ungracious. Stupid idiot. I know, that's a name. I'm sorry. Explain that to your children if you have them. I didn't mean it. I meant much worse. Gosh, we got to listen to wise people. We got to hear them say, you know, that was dumb. Take the purity path, that's all I can tell you. Whether you're a teenager or you have teenagers or grandkids, or whether you're in a marriage and you're thinking, there might be a little spark that happens to me. That spark leads to an explosion that will detonate and destroy you. That's what will happen. Take the sexual path, the sexual purity path. Save it for marriage and marriage only. Part of pleasure, Solomon includes all in what we just read, sex and silliness and alcohol. I got laughter. I hired people that were funny. I can almost picture from here him at the end of a night of these kind of things, shaking his head, wagging it back and forth and saying, golly, this was stupid. What a wasted night. I bet you can hear that too. Next paragraph, second important place. Let me give you a word for it. Achievements. Okay, that's verse 4 and following. So I decided, and I want you to notice as I read this, all of the things, impressive list of accomplishment, all introduced with the pronoun I. For good reason. This was his achievement. This list of, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks, planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water my flourishing groves of trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I had plenty of labor. I also owned herds and flocks more than anyone else in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself, treasures of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, I'll say. The delight of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all of this, my wisdom stayed with me. Notice, he admits further, I denied myself nothing. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart I took delight in all my labors. When I surveyed it all that my hand had done, verse 11, and what I had toiled to achieve, I found it. I finally had what I longed for. No, that's not how verse 11 finished. Everything was meaningless, chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. I got nothing to show for it but regret. What a summary. Augustine was right. Our hearts are restless until they find their rest in Thee. So how clearly, how accurately do Augustine's words describe you this morning? How's your heart? Is it restless? I'm going to take a stab at something. Is it starting to get old for you? You're tired of it? Maybe up to this point, as I said at the beginning, you're a little slow to connect the dots. Don't touch the hot stove, remember? You've been touching hot stoves all your life, and you got lots of burns to show. I'd like you to turn to the last page of his sermon, his manuscript, and see the simple conclusion he came to after his exhaustive and exhausting search. Two principles, and I'll say them both a couple of times so you can write them down. This is the whole thing. The first is in verse 1. Decide now, don't waste another day. Remember, that's the principle. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Remember your Creator now. Decide now, don't put it off another day. Not another day. He could just as easily have said of his search, I think, it's not quite here, but there's hints of it everywhere. Do as I say, not as I have done. One of my favorite memories, working with college students who are trying to shape their future, at least help them set their sails in the right direction. And I remember wondering how to get through to them about marriage and the purity principle and staying married to a certain partner for life, even during boring seasons that come and go. And it's like the Holy Spirit gave me this genius idea. Why don't you reach out to some people that regret having not done that? And so I did. I contacted one of the largest small groups in our church. It was five or 600 people, called Single Parents Fellowship. And I asked them, can I get a few of you to come and share with our college students and tell them about your story, your journey, successes, failures, and regrets? So they did, and they came, and they, one after another, used some version of, do as I say, not as I have done. I think that is what Solomon is saying. I've wasted a lot of time and tears doing dumb things in search for satisfaction, and nothing worked. In fact, all of it combined left me miserable. That's the first principle. You have to turn the page to verse 10, and we'll finish. The teacher searched. He's speaking of himself. It's kind of what you do at a wrap-up. I've looked at it all. I've searched to find just the right words, and what I wrote was absolutely upright and true. I delivered good stuff to you. That's what Solomon is saying here. Drop down now to verse 13 and how he wraps it up. Now, all that has been heard, here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. The principle is this: focus on God now. And don't forget about the future face-to-face you have with Him. Focus on God now. Since then you've been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of the Father, setting your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on earth, Colossians 3 tells us. Focus on God now. Don't forget the future. face-to-face you and I have that he's referring to. Everyone, every one of us is answerable to God for everything we've done or not done. Everything that is visible to your eyes and things that are part of my story you've never seen. I'd like you to bow your heads this morning with me. I want to leave you with a lingering thought that I hope you won't be able to shake off. Save yourself untold pain by realizing that God has designed life under the sun, as Solomon has put it. He's designed it, life without him in the middle, to be miserable. So save yourself pain in your study or search. Stop fighting that fact. Instead, start on a new path where you say, if life under the sun can't satisfy, which Solomon would say, good for you, you got my point. Then give me an appetite, God, for what can satisfy. And I say to you this morning, don't be surprised if you find yourself at that moment looking into the eyes of Jesus. In answer to your prayer, God, if this won't satisfy, give me eyes for what will, if at that moment you don't find yourself looking at Jesus, who longs to have a relationship with you. And by all means, take his hand and let him lead. That's what the Bible calls coming to the right conclusion about life. I've asked Megan to just sing a simple chorus that captures this.